You know, it's funny. When your phone starts glitching or slowing down, what do you actually do?
Right, you plug it in.
Yeah, you plug it in, you hit update, you go to sleep. And the next morning, it wakes up with a brand new operating system.
Exactly. The background apps are cleared out and it's optimized. It just works better.
And we completely accept that our devices need these fundamental ground-up resets to function right. Otherwise, they just grind to a halt.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's non-negotiable for technology.
But when it comes to our own brains, like our own internal operating systems, we usually just keep downloading more and more mental apps, opening more tabs. And then we wonder why our internal battery is at like 1% by noon.
It's a massive blind spot for most
It
people.
really is. Welcome to this custom deep dive, learner. We know you are constantly looking for ways to optimize your reality. So today we're unpacking a really fascinating stack of sources.
And these aren't from a textbook or some peer-reviewed journal. They are highly concentrated, incredibly raw personal notes.
Yeah, they read like a real-time diary of someone actively trying to upgrade their own human operating system.
Which is so relatable. This is an individual trying to escape the modern trap of constant distraction, moving from a frantic, scattered mindset to a state of profound focus.
Right, and energy management too, plus reaching a higher level of consciousness.
Exactly.
So the mission for this deep dive is to extract the core aha moments from that process. We're going to figure out how to escape the illusion of multitasking and redefine what it actually means to be productive.
And then ultimately explore how shifting your own internal energy can fundamentally change the reality of the people around you.
I want to kick things off with a very specific, incredibly grounding moment found early in the notes. The author leaves a directive for themselves.
Oh, I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, it just says, feeling good now, enjoy the moment. Massage with Mia Lisa, always stay focused in the moment.
It's such a revealing detail when you think about it.
Yeah.
Think about the context there. You're getting a massage. The literal solitary objective of that scenario is to relax and exist in your body.
Yet this person had to actively, consciously remind themselves to stay focused on a massage.
Yeah.
That points to a massive vulnerability in our operating system, which the notes call out directly. The trap of context switching.
And the way these notes define context switching, it kind of shifts the entire paradigm.
How so?
Well, we conventionally think of it as splitting our attention. Like we are magically expanding our brain's capacity to hold two complex tasks simultaneously.
Like we're dual core processors or
Right,
something.
exactly. But the author realizes that's a complete fabrication. Context switching isn't bifurcating your attention at all.
So what is it doing?
It's just rapidly switching from one ephemeral thing to another.
Oh, wow. Right. So you aren't actually running two cognitive programs simultaneously.
Not at all.
You're forcing your brain's executive function to cold boot a new software environment every like 3 seconds,
Yes, you're spending all your cognitive RAM on the transition itself.
leaving absolutely nothing for the actual task. That is so graining.
That's the friction that exhausts us, and the notes dig into the psychology of why we willingly burn our RAM like this.
I mean, if we know rapid ephemeral context switching ruins our focus, why is it the default mode for modern professionals?
Well, the notes describe people treating this frantic multitasking as a pinnacle or pride.
Oh, for sure. We treat it as a status symbol. Like, oh, I'm so swamped, I'm juggling 10 major projects right now.
Exactly. We brag about the lack of RAM, but the underlying psychological insight here is much deeper.
What's the real driver then?
The author points out that multitasking actually serves as a defense mechanism.
Really? A defense mechanism against what?
It feels good compared to lower emotional states. If you are harboring underlying anger, or if you are quietly afraid of failing at a primary task, throwing yourself into a whirlwind of multitasking feels like a relief.
Ah, I see. It mimics the sensation of forward momentum.
Precisely. It keeps you moving so you don't have to feel the negative stuff.
So if I'm constantly frantic, I don't have to sit with the fact that I'm anxious about the quality of my work. I have a built-in excuse. I'm just too busy.
The notes identify what this behavior actually is. It's validation seeking.
Validation seeking.
Yeah, it's the ego's way of screaming, "Look how indispensable and busy I am, therefore I matter."
Wow. Okay, so the crucial directive the author gives themselves is to stop this validation seeking entirely.
Right. To truly experience the present moment and sustain a higher state of consciousness, you have to completely sever the ego's addiction to feeling important through chaotic activity.
Okay, I understand the theory of severing that addiction,
Huh.
but let's test this against reality. Because the digital infrastructure of our work is practically engineered to exploit that validation seeking.
Oh, it absolutely is. The system is rigged.
Right. Now, the notes are very tactical, advising us to stop spreading attention across multiple windows like Slack email browser tabs. Because 100% focus on one single thing is what actually generates results.
Yes, 100% focus.
But here is where I always get stuck.
Let me guess. The micro downtimes.
Yes, exactly. Say I'm working on a critical presentation. Deep focus, one tab open. But then I have to wait 45 seconds for a massive data query to run, or like a heavy video file to render.
And your brain just panics.
My brain immediately screams for a quick dopamine hit. The urge to check Slack or clear out three quick emails is overwhelming. How do we survive that specific downtime without getting sucked right back into the matrix?
Well, the notes provide a highly specific workaround for this exact vulnerability.
Okay, I need this.
The author writes to pick something lightweight while waiting. The goal is to occupy the waiting time without initiating a new feedback loop.
Oh, I see. Because checking Slack isn't passive, it's pulling the handle on a slot machine.
Exactly. You might see a message from a client that spikes your cortisol, and suddenly your cognitive RAM is hijacked.
Right. My brain is cold booting a crisis response instead of resting.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. So a lightweight task is something that requires zero cognitive transition.
Like what? What counts as lightweight?
It could be organizing your physical desk, stretching, or literally just doodling on a notepad. You are actively building a moat around your primary focus.
So you're staying in the physical world instead of jumping into a new digital environment.
Right. What the author is doing here is transitioning from a task-based system to a priority-based system.
But that's a huge shift. If I stop trying to cram 100 tasks into an hour and stop validating my worth through sheer volume, I'm basically killing my professional ego.
Yeah. It's uncomfortable at first.
I mean, I have to completely change how I view my own utility. I can't be the hustle guy anymore.
That is the exact identity shift mentioned in the sources. The author explicitly talks about changing their internal narrative.
Moving away from what exactly?
Moving away from being the guy that gets it done and works harder to becoming someone who provides high-value unlocks.
High-value unlocks. I like that phrasing.
Yeah, they are shifting their focus entirely to significance, impact, and leverage.
That makes total sense. Because the guy who works harder relies on the visible struggle to prove his worth.
Exactly. He needs you to see him sweating.
Right. But someone focused on high-value unlocks is just looking for the single domino that knocks down 50 other dominoes.
Yes, the leverage point.
And the notes predict that once you truly internalize this shift, the frantic compulsive pull to work just fades away. You aren't addicted to the struggle, you're focused on the impact.
But that shift introduces a new problem, which the author wrestles with.
Which is?
Well, when you transition away from measuring success by the sheer volume of tasks completed, how do you actually measure it?
Oh, right. Wait, so if I'm looking for a heuristic to measure whether I'm actually doing high-value priority work or just tricking myself, is it about checking my pulse?
What do you mean?
Like, am I literally auditing whether my nervous system is revved up in a state of stress versus relaxed in a flow state?
You are hitting right on the framework the notes use. The author asks themselves, how do I know if this feels good to my ego and nervous system or to a deeper part of myself?
Oh, wow. How do they answer that?
To solve this, they pull from a framework developed by David Hawkins, specifically his concept of power versus force.
Okay, power versus force.
The ultimate heuristic isn't a time audit, it's an energy audit.
Break down the mechanics of that for us. Why does Hawkins differentiate between power and force?
Think about the physics of force. Force always requires constant external effort because it is inherently moving against resistance.
Right, it creates friction.
Exactly. In a work context, forcing an outcome means you are constantly pushing, managing, coercing, and spending your own internal battery to keep the momentum going.
It's exhausting.
It really is. Yeah. Power, on the other hand, operates through alignment. It generates its own momentum because it removes the resistance entirely.
Okay, let me try to visualize this. It's kind of the difference between trying to sail a boat by standing on the deck and blowing into the sails yourself.
Right.
Which is exhausting, looks ridiculous, and gets you nowhere. Versus just stepping back and adjusting the rigging to catch the wind that's already blowing.
That is a perfect visualization of the mechanism. Blowing into the sails is force. Adjusting the rigging is power.
Okay, I love that.
So the heuristic you apply to your daily activities is a simple question. Does this activity give me energy, or does it drain my energy?
Ah, I see. So if you finish a task, say an intense back and forth Slack argument where you quote unquote won the debate, you might feel a brief spike of ego-driven accomplishment.
Sure. You feel like a winner for a second.
But physiologically, your nervous system is flooded with cortisol.
Yeah.
You are drained.
Mm.
That was an act of force.
Exactly. It satiated an addictive pattern, but it consumed your energy.
Right.
Conversely, when you execute a true priority, a high value unlock, you might expend effort, but the completion leaves you feeling energized, clear, and expansive.
Because it's aligned.
Yes, that is power. The notes suggest using this energy audit to radically lower the importance of the things that trigger us.
Right. Once you realize that blowing into the sales is just an ego trap that drains your battery, you just stop doing it.
You preserve that energy for actual leverage.
Okay, so we figured out how to stop draining our own batteries by escaping context switching and auditing our energy. But you can't live in a vacuum.
No, you definitely can't.
Once your internal energy is aligned, how does that actually change the way you collide with other people's chaotic energy? There's a case study here in the notes regarding someone named Alex.
Yes, the focus of the notes shifts outward here. The author is navigating how to guide or help Alex.
Okay.
Now, for a high achiever, someone used to being the guy who fixes everything, the instinct is to use force. We want to tell the people we care about exactly what to do.
Oh, absolutely. Read this book, adopt this routine, fix your life this way.
Right. But the strategy they land on is entirely different. And frankly, it highlights the ultimate paradox for a high achiever.
Which is what?
The most effective way to help is essentially to relinquish your desire to manage their outcome. The directive in the notes is just be inviting, create the invitation, don't tell them what to do.
Really? So you just stop trying to fix them?
Yeah. The examples the author gives are entirely non-coercive. Like, maybe join me at the Angel Con, or I'm going to the gym, would you like to join?
That's fascinating. It's like opening a door and leaving it wide open rather than trying to physically push someone through the doorway.
That's a great way to put it. The notes explicitly state it's not the physical, it's the energy where decisions form.
Which sounds a bit abstract.
It does, but the author backs this up by referencing the physicist Tom Campbell.
Okay, Tom Campbell. How does he fit into this?
This is where the physics of consciousness comes into play. Campbell views consciousness essentially as an information processing system.
Okay, tracking with you.
When a person is operating in a state of high entropy, meaning they are stressed, fearful, or highly ego-driven, their system is literally incapable of processing complex data.
Oh, wow. So they develop severe tunnel vision.
Exactly. They are trapped in a fight-or-flight response.
From a psychological standpoint, their peripheral vision, their ability to see alternative options or creative solutions, completely shuts down.
Yes. They feel trapped between a rock and a hard place because their processing capability is temporarily diminished.
So if Alex is in that high-entropy, lower state of consciousness, and you approach him with aggressive, forceful advice, you just add friction to his system.
You trigger his defenses, increase his stress, and literally narrow his tunnel vision even further.
But when you apply the concept of power instead of force, when you manage your own internal energy drop, your ego's need to fix the situation and simply offer a low-pressure invitation, you are doing something structural to his reality.
You are. The notes use a brilliant phrase for this. You increase the surface area of his opportunities.
Increase the surface area. I love that.
Yeah. When you say, I'm going to the gym, the door is open if you want to come. You aren't demanding cognitive RAM from him to process a complex argument about his health.
Right. You are simply placing a new frictionless variable into his field of awareness.
Exactly. By doing less, you increase their surface area. Because you aren't triggering their defenses, their entropy lowers. Their processor widens back out, allowing them to compute a choice that was previously invisible to them.
And this loops flawlessly back to the energy audit we talked about earlier. Trying to drag someone to the gym through sheer force drains your battery and theirs.
It's exhausting for everyone.
But creating an open invitation that requires no continuous friction. When they finally walk through that door, it's their own internal wind filling their sails, not you standing on the deck blowing at them.
Exactly. It's a high-value unlock for both of you.
Let's synthesize this whole journey, learner, because we've covered a profound evolution in how to operate today. We started by diagnosing the glitch in our daily operating system, which is the illusion of multitasking.
Right. We realized that context switching is an efficiency. It's a cold boot sequence that drains our cognitive RAM, driven by an ego that uses frantic busyness as a defense mechanism against sitting still.
Yeah. From there, we redefined the mechanics of our work. We looked at the danger of micro downtimes and how to protect our focus with lightweight tasks.
Effectively starving the dopamine loops that keep us constantly distracted.
Exactly. We then introduced David Hawkins' concept of power versus force, establishing the ultimate heuristic for productivity, the energy audit.
We stopped asking how long will this take and started asking, will this activity give me energy or drain my energy? We learned to stop blowing into the sails.
And ultimately, we saw how aligning that internal energy changes our external interactions. By killing the identity of the fixer and becoming a high-energy inviter, we learned that the most powerful way to expand someone else's reality is to simply increase the surface area of their choices.
Without forcing the outcome.
It is a complete structural shift from frantic reaction to intentional creation. To wrap up today's deep dive, learner, we want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. A way to test this upgraded operating system against your immediate reality.
Yeah, take a look at the most urgent, stressful, heavily weighted task on your to-do list right now. The one that's giving you that subtle, tight feeling in your chest.
We all have one.
We know now that the frantic pull to work naturally fades when we stop seeking validation. So look at that task and ask yourself, is this truly a priority that will create leverage and generate energy?
Or is it just an addictive pattern? Are you genuinely adjusting the rigging to catch the wind? Or are you just cold booting a dozen different programs hoping someone passing by notices how hard you're working?
Really something to think about.
It really is. Catch you on the next deep dive.